What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today I have a topic that I am really fascinated with. And I have two expert guests on with me that I'll introduce in a moment. But we're going to talk about AI-powered game design. And what is that? And what does it actually mean? And so what, right? Well, imagine if you had a way to practice with your team anytime you had a new situation, an important situation, a huge deal you wanted to close, a change you're making, and you could pregame it, just like athletes do. You could run through all the drills. You could actually practice before you got into the actual situation. How much better would you do if you had that experience? Well, this is why I am so excited about expert theory. And I have the COO and COO with me today. So I'm really excited. Alex Berry, COO, and David Gerenstein Ross, CEO. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alice. It's wonderful to join you again.
Yes, you've been on the show before, David, and we had a lot of great conversation about how you started your company back then. And now you have actually made some incredible changes and advancements that we're going to talk about. So it's really exciting. So give us just like the short story, like what does expert theory do and who do you do it for?
Expert theory creates games that are highly bespoke for a situation that a company or other institution is going to confront, ranging from national security situations for some of our government clients to for companies, different kind of political risk or other risk management scenarios, sales and the like. So in other words, I love the athlete visualization metaphor that you drew, because that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to replicate the world that the customer confronts, allow them to wander through it in a way that feels very real and ideally is fun to go through. And at the end, they'll hopefully come away with deeper insights. And when the actual situation that they're pre-gaming comes up, they won't be as nervous. They'll have thought through angles that might not be apparent, and they'll make better decisions.
Absolutely. And this is why I'm so excited about it for my world, which is sales, complex sales, right? Companies who are small, selling to companies 1,000 times their size. We need these salespeople to practice and the whole selling team to practice before they get in front of these buyers. And especially on these highly complex deals where we're talking about millions of dollars. So you know that we're going to talk some more about that today for sure. But let's talk about how this all evolved, because I think it's really important to look at where you started and how you got to this point where you developed these games that people can use to simulate the situation they're going to be in.
Yeah. So when I first joined you, I was still running my first company, Valens Global, which I successfully exited from last year. It still is a wonderful company with a great new CEO, Derek Jones. But I developed this method of creating games, which we call immersive exercises, over the course of about a full decade while running Valens Global. It was originally a practice group within that company, and I realized it was mature enough to split out as its own business. So basically, the evolution of the business was, after running games for training and education for a while, I realized that we had developed a completely different method than others used. Our games tend to be characterized by an intense information environment, very deep world building. In other words, wherever you look within the game, there's layers there that the more you peel back, the more value you get, as well as often things that are entertaining and keep one hooked. They often will feel like stories or movies, because we as humans are storytelling creatures. Those are some of the major characteristics of immersive exercises, as we call them. And they're not just kind of random. They're not just done because they're fun. There's actually a two-year study that Duke University Mixed Method Evaluators just wrapped up, looking specifically at our style of game, and concluded a lot of positive learning outcomes to them, including perspective taking, causal reasoning, and increase in substantive knowledge. Now, when I split out from my old company to form Expert Theory, what I realized was with the revolution in large language models, we could build a platform that would allow people to create their own games in the same way that I or our great game designers like Eleanor Ross or Caroline Gilmore would create games. In other words, there'll be a series of prompts, people will answer them, and then it runs through an internal logic chain that ends up with the platform producing games similar to what my designers do. So that was the idea for the company, democratizing games and making this wonderful tool much more widely available.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. Put it in the hands of everyone who needs it. It's so easy the way you have the prompts and you just keep answering them and then out comes the game, right? I mean, that's amazing. I know that took a lot of work too. So, all right. You started off with a lot of government work and doing some very high level sophisticated games for the government to learn how to deploy different things that they were trying to do. I know you've done a lot for for university level, right?
Yeah.
And some really good games with some of the professors, and I've heard about those. And tell us a little bit more about what you're doing for tech companies and other companies who want games for learning as well now.
Yeah, we've been doing this since the founding of the company. We see ourselves as being in four marketplaces. You mentioned K-12, and we actually are in that space as well. We're doing our first K-12 game in January of next year. But for private companies, almost every private company has multiple points of pain that they're interested in, which can be gamified. And when you go through a game, you come away better prepared. So I'll give a couple of examples, and these are going to be a little bit vague because, as you'll see with the topic, the customers don't really want to be associated with it. Not because they're doing anything wrong, but like the first use case is a cyber attack use case. And even though it's a company preparing for a cyber attack, they really don't want their name and a cyber attack in the same sentence. but a major private company that has a large amount of medical data of users, they really wanted to make sure they were prepared for a ransomware attack. So we created a game that went through the stage of a ransomware attack. It brought their C-suite, including CIO and their incident response team together, and basically walked through each stage from the beginning of an attack to the very end. And what it allowed them to do is to see if their playbook was consistent, where gaps were, where there were places where different people thought someone else had the lead, and really kind of was able to go through, stress test their playbook, and at the end of the day, they could come back and revamp that playbook after understanding through the game what kind of gaps it showed. A second example is a major tech company. As you mentioned, we do a fair amount of work in the tech sphere, which was just about to undertake a tech deployment. And their concern was that there could be political risk that their team wasn't seeing. So they had us come in and stress test their technology to see what kind of angles of attack existed, what kind of controversies could exist. To step back for one second and just to explain a little bit more, we talked about one modality, which is we have our platform that allows people to create their own games. I also have this wonderful creative team inside Expert Theory. The creative team will design games for companies. Sometimes it's helpful to have expert facilitators or expert designers for something that is a little bit more complex. So those are the two modalities that we tend to work through. Some are more client-based and look a little bit more like consulting projects. The other is, you know, a straight tech sale, but with a lot of support to make sure that people succeed in using them. Right now, also, we think that a lot of people out there don't understand just what games can do for them. So part of what our job is right now is educating the market and making people understand the immense value they can get from using games to understand core issues that they're thinking about right now.
So that is a perfect segue to where I want to go next. And Ali, I wanted to pick your brain on this because I think it's so important. There are lots of ways we can prepare people to do things, right? And of course, we have our basic training when we hire people. We onboard them and then we give them some training. And if we're smart, we continue to train them and repeat training and things like that, right? But we have a lot of expectations for the people who work with us to be able to do certain things and to do them really well. But I feel like a lot of times we just don't actually prepare them to do that, or they're prepared in a way that individually they know, but as a team, they don't know or can't deploy. And so as a person who's lived in the training world for a long time and who works on changing people's behaviors all the time, I want a better way, right? So I can sit people in a classroom for 2 days and I can lecture to them and have them do a workshop, and, you know, or I can put them in an online course. You know, there's, I could let them do LinkedIn learning. I mean, there's a lot of things I can do, but a lot of times it doesn't sink in. They don't get it. They're still not able to use it in the field or use it as a team. And this is why I'm so fascinated. So let's talk about why this is such a superior method of preparation.
Well, Alice, I know I remember telling you the story before of when, you know, when I was working in Texas selling air conditioning, like large scale air conditioning, they flew me up for negotiations training. And David invited me to his game at Georgetown, which is how I ended up in the company, because I was charmed by the experience of it all. But that negotiations training was so informative for me because I was with this group of salespeople and mentors, and we had to run through this negotiations training that felt very real, but it was like the first time I was, you know, formulating a debate essentially to a customer. And we went through it, we did really well, but one of the things that my mentor had told me was like, you didn't ask how you could help. And that's ultimately like what we took away from that experience was like, you know, and a lot of times in negotiations, you go in with a mindset of like, what do I want out of this conversation? But a lot of times you don't think about the other person or empathy or like empathy for their situation. And you don't kind of see the cross section of how you can work together. And ultimately that is what a negotiation is. And I think our games bring that to light a lot of the time. Is empathy for the other side or their perspective so that you can work better alongside each other. So I saw that in expert theory in the immersive exercises. And I thought that was like really cool to bring to the marketplace of how do you work these things out, especially with like such strong scene setting and scenario building.
Yeah. How do you see what you don't see or think about things from a different perspective, right? That often isn't in any training that we give people. That's sort of a delivery kind of training, right? That they're listening and then taking a quiz, or they're sitting in a classroom and listening and then maybe doing a workshop. They may not be getting that. When you build a game, you can put it in perspective for them and think of things that they may not have thought of before. But not only that, they're actually doing, not just learning, right? And for me, you know, I think you guys remember, I started my career as a special education teacher. That's why I know so much about behavior change. And then I was a reading specialist. So I got to teach kids who can't read to read, right? But that has to be very immersive. I can't just say, oh, you read like this. You have to actually let them do it. And I think that's what so much training is lacking. I can only speak to, you know, sales training because and leadership training, because that's what I know. But in any kind of training that you need to help you do better in the real world, if you're doing it right, it's better than someone telling you what to do. And so talk about how the games do that.
Well, I also think that role playing is really hard. It's really hard to lose yourself in a game. And what fundamentally our games do is they allow you to be so immersed in what's going on in the scene that you just have no choice but to start role playing. Like, in order to move forward, you have to make a decision, you have to negotiate, and you have to get out of your seat and start talking to the other teams. We actually did this digitally with our team internally, which was a really fun game. And so we started video calling each other and like pinging ideas off of each other where, you know, it just was so interactive that you couldn't help but like immerse yourself or lose yourself to that role. And then, you know, you come out like so much stronger with like a new skill set of like how to talk to another team.
Because you actually did it. You were just listening to someone telling you how to do it. You actually did it. And I can't say for any other field but sales that people hate role-playing. They just hate it. It's so hard to get them to do it. You know, now I'm pretty good at getting people to role-play because I'm good at cajoling and making it fun and all of that. Right. But mostly I just hear people do not want to role play. I don't know if that's true for other groups besides sales, but sales people don't want to role play. So David, what do you see in these other, you know, worlds that you live in with government and, you know, education? Are people reluctant to role play in those scenarios also?
I don't know if they're generally reluctant to role play, but they're not reluctant to role play with us. And I'm confident that actually with sales, people will not be reluctant to role play with us, depending upon the kind of sales, right? There are certain kinds of sales that nobody really wants, like the cold call sales, like that it's hard to create good role play around right. that. I mean, really role play is like a bunch of people hanging up on you and some people yelling at you for interrupting their dinner. But for most sales, I'll tell you the secret that our games would incorporate, and I think most of them miss. What matters for sales so much is everything else you do when you're not making the sale.
Yeah.
Right. And anyone who plays one of our games understands that it's not the things within the four corners of the interaction. It's everything outside what you'd regard as the four corners. So for some of our geopolitical games, you know, different teams will leave cell phones on in another team's room, basically a form of kind of espionage or spying. So that's like kind of the four corners of the rules, but totally legit to do in our game. A second thing is the way they interact with each other, whether you're coming on strong, whether you kind of greet someone, whether you come in confidently, all those make a difference to the success or failure of what you're doing, the ability to read a room. And so I think if we do sales role playing right, a lot matters outside of the sale. So when you and I first talked, Alice, let me put that a little bit differently. A lot matters outside of the words that you use to make the sale. So when you and I first talked, we talked about a book that I was using for the kind of complex commercial transactions that my first company, Valence Global, did. That book is Sales EQ. And essentially the argument of the book is that you make sales by not trying to make sales. That if you focus on the relationship, sales will follow. If you focus on the sale, you destroy the relationship. The reason why I think people would be interested in our games for sales is because it represents the real process of a sale. A lot of what matters for a sale is not just the four corners of coming in and making the argument for a sale, like going through your script, but rather how you build that relationship, which then eventually manifests in that sale. And so, Alice, when I came on your show the first time, I talked about the book Sales EQ and how you make a sale by focusing on the relationship. If you focus on the sale, you can destroy the relationship. And so our games would for sales would replicate much more relationship building and finally getting to the point of sale. And I think when you look at it that way, looking at it strategically and not just this role play that is focused on the words that you say and the script that you go through to try to land a customer, suddenly it is much more in line with their lived experience. And moreover, like for most salespeople, certainly for me, my experience as a CEO, is that the process of generating sales is really interesting, right? There's really interesting personalities. You have to figure out where the point of relevance is, how to strike up the relationship, the tone to set, how to give them something that will be low risk and will show them the value. All this is a part of a sale. Our games can replicate all of that. And I think that when one steps back and looks at the sales process and the role you'd be in more holistically, suddenly role-playing becomes a lot more attractive.
Absolutely. And I think that when we can make these games so that they feel like they're in the real conversation that's going to happen, like, here's what I dream of. having a game that helps my salespeople to work through with a customer, you know, all the things that have to happen, right? So it's a selling team and a buying team together in a room. You know, we're past the, you know, get introduced stuff, right? And now we're actually working on the real, you know, opportunity and understanding what they really need and helping them solve, even if that solution ends up not being us, right? But we're actually working through that and having those in-depth conversations. And I think that salespeople, and especially newer salespeople, never really have the opportunity to practice having a conversation that has that kind of depth. Yeah. And these games to me would just be remarkable, right? Because you can bring that in with the scenario and have everybody actually practicing. Then it doesn't feel so much like role playing because they're in a real conversation and it's going back and forth and they're having to figure stuff out and they have to think about the next step, right?
Or even like adjust to a competitor too. Like we could even add competitors where all of a sudden you have to like reposition yourself in a conversation. Like, you know, when I was a new salesperson, I didn't really know how to deal with competition. And so that's something that you might want to practice first.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I mean, thinking because they're always going to throw in, well, we just had a call with XYZ company. You know, how do you compare to them? Well, of course, we don't want to go there, but we have to have a pretty good answer and then keep the conversation going the direction we want. Right. And a lot of times we don't even know, unfortunately, what that competitor is doing. So we need time to prepare. And I always tell salespeople, don't answer. Tell them, oh gosh, you know, that's a great question. Let me get back to you with some insight on that. And now you go in the scenario, right? If you're in the game and you're like, okay, I got to get this information, put it together and be ready to, you know, give it back to the customer when I next meet with them. So I love that you could run them through all the paces and you could throw, you know, you could throw a ringer in there all of a sudden, right? Yeah. And then they see what the salespeople do because we do need them to think on their feet, right? We need preparation, but then we need them to think on their feet. And just imagine if salespeople ran through this, especially with their their largest accounts in mind, you know, the real big money, how much better they would be at doing this in real life. So Alex, I want to talk about this. So how does this work? So let's just say, you know, one of the CEOs listening now is going, all right, how do I bring this into my company? We're not doing any regular old sit in your butt in the seat training anymore. We're going to do some real life pre-gaming, do the drills, practice before we get in front of the customer. So what would that look like? Like, just take me through from the beginning. So I'm like, hey, I definitely want to do a game at my company and I want it to be around sales. What's the first step?
Well, you want to focus first on like your learning objectives, like what you want your participants to get out of the game itself. And then we attach, so the reason why we're called expert theory is because we want to attach the expert to our methodology and then have learning objectives come out of the results of them playing this game. And so really we're creating a scenario for your people to work through and creating a scenario that they can have some fun injects as well so that those learning objectives are tacky. Overall, it's about peer-to-peer learning. So like learning that they can get from their peers, learning that they can pull out from their customers, and then adapt that learning and those skills to the results so that they step out of the experience and walk away with those skills.
Okay, so let's say I have, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're fine.
Okay, so let's say I have this large account management scenario, which this is something I do every day with my clients, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking through these large accounts, but I also have a methodology I want them to use. Let's say it's like the Miller-Hyman strategic selling and conceptual selling. So I've trained them on that. And now I want to see if they can use it, right? Because here we are in this scenario. So whether I'm using the consultant or using the prompts to build my game, right? I would need to tell it, here's what I want them to be able to do when they're done, right? Here's the behaviors, here's the results I want. And I want to make sure they're using, you know, this methodology while they're doing it, right? Because there's many ways that you can do things, but now I've already trained them on this and I want them to use it. So how do I build that in?
Okay, this is a perfect example. So like, let's say they've gone through the training and they have a bunch of takeaways that they know they want to use, but let's test their skills. Let's see if they actually learn something or they know how to apply it. So I'll just use my HVAC, the large scale air conditioning example, because that experience was so fun and like really foundational for me. So it was a customer that was actually an existing customer. They were upset with us. That was the scenario. And so the scenario was actually pretty difficult because, like, you know, we had a role player come in, which is very similar to our games, but this would be like the open brief in our games. And so the role player was like, I'm upset. Like, you know, you didn't, I forget the specifics, but like, let's say like the electrical was off or you ordered the wrong thing. And so we had to adapt and adjust to that in the scenario and pull out from our training the things that we learned previously and start adapting those things, because they were the people who were observing us wanted to make sure that we were like using, like you said, the methodology that we had just learned. And then we pull you through a beat system, which is we have several moments where you have to make a decision point, you have to make a negotiation and submit that through our platform so that the world that you're, the scenario that you're in will evolve and adapt to your decision making. A lot of times what we miss is that in a bad situation, like in sales, you could actually end up not only repairing that situation because you're in the trenches with your client, but you can also sell more things and build a longer partnership. Yeah. So like, that doesn't necessarily need to be the goal, but it is something that people just don't foresee when they go into, you know, a crisis in the beginning. So, you know, you could end up with a customer for life if you handle that situation really well. And I think our platform tests that through the decisions that you make and how that world evolves.
So I bet that other people are thinking the same thing I am. And I you know, want to know, so how does the scenario either prompt you or grade you? So like during, you know, you've built the whole thing and you said, here's what I want as a result. I want these salespeople to practice being in a situation with large account management, and I want them to make sure they're using strategic selling, conceptual selling methodologies. So inside the scenario, when they're actually doing it, mm-hmm. if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, does it prompt them, or does it somehow at the end say, here's what you did well and here's what you didn't do? So how do we know how we did?
Yeah. So, I mean, in any kind of like situation, just like real life, you kind of like fall away. Like the customer in the scenario may not respond to you as like positively, let's say, but there is an after action review at the end of the game. So it does tell you how well that you did. Like it's looking for things, it's observing for things, just like any kind of observer would do. It's looking for those things at the end of the game.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So, and I guess the other players too can prompt you, because if everybody knows like the rubric ahead of time, like here's what we're trying to do. Right. And I mean, you're not going to hide it from them. It's like, here's the results we're trying to get. And don't forget to use everything you learned, you know, in our training. And then I guess the other players can prompt, or like you said, the people who are playing the customer can just not respond or not react when the others are not, you know, doing it in a way, right, that we want them to do it in the real life when we get there. So very, very interesting. So this, David, this is, you know, these AI prompts can build your game, or the consultants can build the game. And I have this question, so I'm just going to ask it. I know the answer to it now, but I bet everybody's wondering. So is this online? Do we do it by video? Do we do it in person? Like, how do we actually do this?
It's a great question. And there's a few different modalities. Our platform is called Providence. Providence can be found online. Those who want to, who are interested in Providence, our website, experttheory.com, has a full page on it. We typically will reach out work with the customer to build out the use case. We want people to be able to give a try to it. For you know, when we're building a game for someone, it, the answer is actually going to differ a little bit, because we look at games through this process of logic, function, and then form. Like, we start with, what is the game trying to accomplish? What is the logic of the game? The function, what is it for? And then finally, from that, we build the form. And some of our games we don't have in the digital realm at all. Some of the games are just a negotiation with role players there. And what we do with our AI in terms of world building, et cetera, people just might see that as background material.
So for you others, would actually come out to my company, we'd be in the conference room or have a training room, and we are actually live doing this. And I heard you say something, you can actually bring people with you who, when you're doing this, that will play the other side, right?
Yeah, precisely. Because, you know, we're a high-tech company, but like, when we step back and talk about the games, we're in a high-tech world, but people crave high touch, right? They want other people. And so to me, it's not attractive to have, games, it's all AI and you walk through it. Instead, you want something that will feel real. And I think going back to the conversation, I was listening to you and was super interested in your exchange with Ali about what we would do and how to represent when someone gets things wrong. And what Ali was getting at in response is people find out at the end, right? The conversation will unfold and it'll feel organic. I think this is how you get over the aversion to role-playing, that it has to not feel like roles, right? Oftentimes you'll have a methodology that's being tested, but you kind of know the answers, and the process of going through the methodology can seem really artificial if the game isn't good. Instead, it has to seem real, right? That's why we use the term immersive exercise. If you're immersed in it, it's interesting, right? The role players take on a life of their own. They're not just kind of playing a role or a generic customer. They have a personality. There are things that they're after. You can talk to them. You might appeal to them. You might not, right? A really good rule book, part of it involves improvisation, because every person is going to be a little bit different. And the rules that you use to talk to a customer, you have to kind of figure out on the spot how to fine tune them in order to really appeal to that customer. And so, the answer is we look at what is necessary, like what the customer is trying to accomplish. We'll build a game around that. And sometimes it'll be on the platform, especially if one's looking for something that's scalable in terms of training. You can submit moves through the platform and can play an entire game digitally. But if my team is doing it, oftentimes they're going to get away from the digital space and do the game live and really have it be human touch. Because oftentimes that's exactly what we need to build a successful game and make people better at their job of sales.
Yeah, and I agree with you. People want high touch. Today, people want to be with people. And they're craving it. So we want to give it to them. And we bring, in the world of sales anyway, we bring our sales teams together once or twice a year anyway. So we can actually run one of these games. But also, I'm thinking about most of the time salespeople are, or sales teams together are on a video. So there's maybe three buyers on the video call and, a seller and a customer success manager and a sales engineer, let's say. And they don't always get to go be in person. And they need to practice the skill on the video as well, because they have trouble looking into the camera. They're, looking all around the place and doing weird things. And, and so I see that we could use this that way too. We can develop the game. And then part of it is, how did you do on video? Were you able to switch the screen as you needed? Look in the camera. Also keep your eye on the participants to see what they were up to, right? Yeah. And I think that would be a great part of the game also for sales, because they can practice those skills that they need in person when they are in front of a customer, which are a certain set of skills, and then the skills they need on video, which are a different set of skills.
Yeah, I agree entirely. And I think the spoiler alert, of course, is that this is something that we're building out that's important to us. We sales is such an essential part of what any company does. And there's a lot better of a way to train for sales, like from the modalities of in-person to on a video call to making decisions via a platform that allows you to input moves and will judge them as you go through. These are all different modalities of getting smarter, and that's what ultimately expert theory is designed to do. It's designed to make us smarter by creating training that feels much more like going through the real thing, and that feels much more real to us.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I love that you just said that, because it reminds me to talk. I wanted to talk about how you did a pivot and rebranded, because, we need to explain to people, what do these games do? Why are they better? Right. And so, Alex, talk a little bit about that, because I know you led that. You had people telling you, we don't really understand, like, is this a video game or like, what is this? Oh, well,
this is really like David and I's story, because like, I come from a commercial background. Like, I'm not a federal person. I haven't worked in the federal government. I just happened to have moved to Virginia, and luckily like the universe intervened and I met David. David could kind of tell this story. It's like a fun one. But yeah, I come from a commercial background. David is a counterterrorism darling. Like, he's worked in the federal space for forever. So I'll let him speak to that more.
Yeah, I mean, so that's my background in the federal space. But when I met Ali, when we were introduced, I realized right away that I wanted her to be my COO. I just realized that there were all these, given the markets that my company was going to be in, I knew the federal space well, and had made commercial sales before, but she knew so much. So many things were intuitive to her that just were not intuitive to me. And given these divergent backgrounds, we often just speak differently. One of the things that I've had to learn has been, how to listen to the way she's trying to communicate. And so the rebrand to expert theory is, I think, one of the most wonderful, areas where things clicked. So when she first, at first we were called Valens Games, which was a nod to my first company, Valens Global.
Right, it was a spinoff, right? Because you were Valens Global, and then you meant Valens Games, but then people think games, and then they, of course, are thinking about video games.
And so we always knew that it was a little bit of a placeholder, that we would change it. And Ali was the one who said, okay, well, what about expert theory? And my response was, I hate it. Like, terrible.
Like, Eleanor hated it too. I didn't really like it either, but I was like, I this is a part of the design process. Like, it's going to grow on you.
Right.
Like,
right. But Ali also talk about, and that is true, these names do grow on you, but people were saying things to you that made you go, oh my gosh, they have no idea what we're doing.
People just didn't know what we did. And I was like, okay, like, we need a definition. We need our own definition for the brand. Like, we need to define what it is that we do. And like, David has designed this amazing methodology that just pulls things out of people where they just completely lose themselves. And now they're like role playing. And then, like, we've had like very high level people play our games and not look at their phone and then realize they've tapped out of like their very important responsibilities for like 90 minutes. And being like, oh shoot, I have to go to a meeting. I was just here to observe. So like, what was important to me is simplicity and trust. And those were like the things that we were talking about before we started this podcast today, was that we needed to bring that to our brand. So we needed to make things simple so that people, if they heard our brand, they were like, okay, it's simple. I understand what they do. But also, when you put a lot of thought into your branding and your brand identity, people acknowledge that through trust. And so they know that you've thought about it deeply and that you've put a lot of love and passion towards something through a name, through design. Like, and our design isn't fully there, but we've thought about this for like the last 9 months about who we are and what we want to be. And expert theory came from, we went down to North Carolina in my 2004 BMW that has no air conditioning. And like, Eleanor and I were like sweating and like, it's 90 degrees. And so we go down to see David and I'm like, okay, like, I'm going to pitch this name. I don't know how it's going to go. And then so David says, I hate it. And I'm like, okay, good. Let's start there.
So yeah. That's a good place to start. And I mean, this is so recent because like the I just talked to you a couple of weeks ago and it was still Valens Games, right? And so then right before we got on and I'm looking, you know, doing my homework as I always do right before I get on, refreshing myself on the brand. And I'm like, oh, they changed their name. Yeah. So like literally, this was just recently.
The decision had been made a while back. So the retreat in North Carolina that Ali is referring to, this is where she launched her own little campaign. She decided that if she talked to us in newscaster voices, to me and Eleanor Ross, our creative director, then like eventually it would come across. And so like literally she'd follow us around during this leadership retreat and say, and now presenting on his book, Expert Theory, David Gartenstein Ross. After she'd done this for a few days, the very last day, Eleanor and I, like the three of us were on a walk. And Eleanor's like, you know, I don't hate the name. And I said, you know, yeah, neither do I. And like the more we've used it, the more I've actually come to love it. And Ali, again, with her commercial experience, we're working on a branding package for it. One thing that it's going to do is, I mentioned the Providence platform, that will be renamed Expert Theory so that the platform and the company have the same name. But ultimately, to me, there's two things I love. Like, I love the new name. Like, it has grown on me. The more I, you know, the thing I forgot to mention, the very first time I rejected it, she said, okay, but it's probably going to grow on you, and I'm going to go ahead and buy the domain online just in case you decide you don't hate it. What I love about it, number one, is I've come to love the name. But number two, like, I love, speaking of sales, like, I loved Ali's persistence because she had a good idea. And like, you know, both of the other senior people in the company at the time both rejected it. And then eventually she won over because it was a good idea. So I also like what it says about my working relationship with her, which is, you know, this very profound working relationship that I value so much.
Yeah. And this is just like external sales. Honestly, it's really, everybody take note, right? This is what you do. You build a relationship such that you can be persistent when you know something that they need to know that's going to change, you know, the results that they get for the better. It's your job as a seller to persist, not to just give up because they said, oh, we don't like it. We don't want to do it. No, we're not going to change now. Yeah, that's right. That's the way a sale starts, right?
Yeah.
And then you got to keep going and that perseverance, that, you know, polite, but persistent. And when you know something that they don't necessarily know, and you're trying to help them move along, that's exactly what sales is, really. And so many salespeople are just not trained to do that. So we can build a game for that too. But anyway, oh my gosh, we're getting to the end of our time here. I love talking to you guys about this. I feel like this opens a whole new world. And the fact that you built it with the AI so now that anyone can use it is just phenomenal. And so many uses for it. But in my world, it's so much great practice pre-gaming, right? To get ready, to get in front of your largest customer. Wouldn't it be worth it? Holy cow. To let your team run through the scenario before they actually get in front of the customer. I always say, yeah, we shouldn't practice on our customers. We should practice before, right? And this would actually make it fun.
Yeah. I couldn't say it better myself, Alice. thanks for a great conversation. It's great joining you again. This is a wonderful show, and it's an honor to be able to talk about this with you in today's episode.
All right. Well, let's tell people how they can find you. So in case they are interested in changing the way they're helping their salespeople learn and prepare to a better way, how would they find you?
Check us out at experttheory.com. We still actually are using the old Valens Games email domain, but you can email me at David, D-A-V-E-E-D, at valensgames.com, or Alex at aberry@valensgames.com.
All right, good. So I'll put all this in the show notes, of course, so they can find you. Thank you again for being on the show. I have just enjoyed this so much. And, you know, just sort of a sneak peek, but you might have guessed that the three of us are working on something together for sales. So keep your eyes out for that, because I think these games are phenomenal and I am going to go for it. So, yeah.
We're so excited. We can't wait.
I know. Thanks for being on the show, you guys.
Thanks, Alice.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.